This hour of Ring of Fire is brought to you by the Goldwater Law Firm, a stellar organization. Visit them online, bobgoldwater.com.
Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Sam Cedar. Today on Ring of Fire, we'll be hearing more interviews from this year's Netroots Nation convention, including Bill McKibben, founder of 350.org and author of the new book, Earth, Heather Hurlburt from the National Security Network, and Matt Duss from the Center for American Progress will join us to discuss the situation in Syria. Activist Zach Walls will discuss marriage equality. Forrest Brown will tell us how the PCCC is working to get progressives elected across the country. We'll also hear from Robert Borsage from the Center for American Progress on how we can create a political system that works for the 99%. Tyson Slocum from Public Citizen will discuss the need to rein in oil speculators. Mother Jones' Andy Kroll on how the Wisconsin uprising was hijacked. Alternate senior editor Josh Holland will discuss the media's misrepresentation of Bain Capital. Truthout's Mike Ludwig will tell us about the bully tactics of the fracking industry. And Steven Rosenfeld from Alternet will discuss the geezer billionaires that are now running the GOP. You can follow Ring of Fire on Facebook or on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. And you can email us at info@ringoffireradio.com. And if you want to help support Ring of Fire, you can subscribe to our weekly podcast, or you can sponsor an hour of the show for just $100. You can sign up for both online at ringoffireradio.com. It's your support that helps keep us on the air. This hour of Ring of Fire is brought to you by attorney Robert Kerrigan, representing clients with injuries and deaths resulting from human rights abuses in foreign countries. You can find him online at Kerrigan.com. We've got a lot to cover today, so we're just going to jump right in. My first guest today is one of the leaders of the modern environmental movement, Bill McKibben. He's been on the front lines on issues like Keystone XL, mountaintop removal mining, fracking, and a host of other issues. He's the founder of 350.org and a frequent contributor to EchoWatch.org. And he's here with us now to talk about some of the major struggles the environmental movement has faced in just the last 12 months.
Bill, first off, you know, this was a 2012 and the past year has been quite a year and a half for the environmental movement. There has been increasing, I don't want to say militancy, but increasing aggressive direct action. Starting with Tim DeChristopher, and who was the environmental activist who went into a federal land lease auction and bid up the prices for an auction that was invalid for other reasons anyway, and ended up getting 2 years in prison, which is a stunning amount of time to be in prison.
And let me just say, I got to go visit Tim out in prison about a month ago, and he's doing really well and really strong and about to have his appeals. Even if he doesn't get win the appeal, he'll be on the loose by Christmas time or thereabouts, I think, and we cannot wait to get him back on the outside.
He really is an incredibly admirable figure. I mean, genuinely admirable.
He is a good man.
He, does a little bit of a tangent, but he also rejected money for his own defense fund by a corporation or a company that was outsourcing American jobs. Now, I want to sort of circle back to this in a minute, because that is not an environmental concern. But he is in prison for environmental activism. Let's start there, actually. Talk to me about the idea of this environmental activist being so concerned about the idea of jobs for America, of an issue that has traditionally been in a different issue silo.
I think we're starting to realize that there aren't really different issue silos. It's exactly the same people that we're fighting on every front. So, for instance, we've just come through this disastrous election in Wisconsin. why did we lose? One reason was that the Koch brothers poured an insane amount of money. I mean, and I'm talking insane amount of money into that state. Where did the Koch brothers get their money? Well, by gum, what do you know? They're deep, deep, deep in the tar sands of Canada, the place where this pipeline is supposed to come south that we've been fighting for the last year, a pipeline that'll deliver endless amounts of carbon to the atmosphere and endless amounts of money into the pockets of the Koch brothers, which they'll use to take aim at our union brothers and sisters and at everything else that's, you know, right and proper in this world.
We're talking about Keystone XL. And from a tactical standpoint, I mean, because then, and we had spoken on this program and on my other program around the time of Tim DeChristopher's sentencing, I believe it was, and you had suggested to me, and I think that was probably about a year and a half ago, in March or February of last year, that we're going to see more direct action by environmentalists. And then over the course of the summer, late summer, you organized about 1,500 to 2,000 activists who were willing to get arrested in Washington. Just remind us of
yes,
that.
Yes, we actually, somewhat to my surprise, since I may have talked a good game when I was talking with you, but I've never actually organized something quite like this. Working with a lot of other people, we put together what turned into the largest civil disobedience action in 30 years in America. 1,253 people arrested over 2 weeks outside the White House that took an issue, this Keystone Pipeline, that frankly almost no one had heard of a year ago and made it into a national issue. In fact, such a national issue that Mitt Romney in his first TV commercial of the general election last week said, "My first task in my first hour in the White House will be to approve the Keystone Pipeline." So, you know, for better or for worse, we at least showed you can take a issue no one's ever heard of and put it someplace close to the middle of the national agenda, not with money, but with our bodies.
And there was at least a short-term victory on that accord.
Temporary victories are, you know, the only kind that environmentalists win. This one may be more temporary than most. The president did a pretty brave thing. He said, "We're going to delay consideration of this pipeline for a year to take a closer look at it." He did it in the face of the American Petroleum Institute, a.k.a. Big Oil, saying, "We will make you pay huge political consequences," quote unquote. They're doing all that they can. I mean, that Romney ad's part of it. So are the hundreds of millions of dollars that various fossil fuel tycoons are pouring into the campaign against the president. Now, I got to be honest with you. The president's done some other things that aren't as brave, and we've been busily opening up the Powder River Basin to coal mining and the Arctic to oil drilling and things like that. But at least in this case, where citizens actually managed to get their act together to stand up and say what was what, we had an administration that was willing to listen.
You know, and I want to get your take on this because there's a lot of conversations that are taking place across across the board following Wisconsin, which I don't think provided anything new to the conversation, but made everything a little bit more urgent. And that is, how do we get more? How can people, via their bodies, via their actions, their protest actions, get more responsiveness out of the administration? And many people have turned to the marriage equality model that we've seen much more of that. But I actually think that Keystone, the actions that you've taken at Keystone are far more applicable. I want to get your sense of this because at the end of the day, marriage equality does not have big economic implications outside of for those people who are going to have that equality. It has big issues if you're a married couple and you're not getting the same rights as another married couple. That has big financial issues.
But there's
issues.
Not big money in bigotry in this case.
No,
yeah.
And I think that's why that analogy has not been as apt. But the idea that you could get President Obama, even if only briefly, to buck up against huge and powerful economic forces seems to me to be at least there's something prescriptive there.
So, Sam, there's two things here. Yeah, one, that's true. It was remarkable to be able to get the president and the administration to realize that we were as serious as the oil industry was. Okay. The second thing, however, is I think what I've learned as much as anything else is we're not going to do this fight against climate change in the end one pipeline at a time. We're going to have to figure out how to get behind the politicians and actually at the fossil fuel industry, because that's where the money and the influence is coming from. That's why this summer at 350 we're doing this big campaign.
Let's take a break. Yeah, I want to take a break here. And when we come back, I want to talk about how it is that we can sort of have a more global response to what is, literally...
How we actually kick the fossil fuel industry in the nuts if we possibly can. Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
All right.
No,
we're
literally.
So to speak. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more from Bill McKibben.
Welcome back to Ring of Fire. I'm Sam Cedar. Remember, if you want to help support Ring of Fire, you can sponsor an hour of our show. You can sign up online at ringoffireradio.com. This hour of Ring of Fire is brought to you by attorney Robert Kerrigan, representing clients with injuries and deaths resulting from human rights abuses in foreign countries. You can find him online at kerrigan.com. Now let's get back to our interview with Bill McKibben, founder of 350.org and author of the new book, Earth, Making a Life on a Tough New Planet.
When we broke, Bill, we were talking about the realization that you and others have had in the environmental movement, that you cannot, to quote you from just our last segment, you cannot fight global warming and its implications one pipeline at a time, that you must go directly towards the source of the problem. Because in some ways, these pipelines are symptoms.
Yes. And there's too many of them. We don't have enough fingers to stick in all the possible dikes, you know, in this case. So the fight is to get at that incredible special privilege that the fossil fuel industry enjoys, the only industry in the world that's allowed to just throw its waste out for free, okay? That's the biggest subsidy that they have, that they can pour their carbon into the atmosphere and wreck the climate without paying a price. But this summer, what we're working on is a kind of prelude to that, a kind of appetizer, is the direct subsidies that these guys get. Bernie Sanders, my senator, introduced a bill last week along with Keith Ellison from Minnesota in the House that will remove $113 billion in direct federal subsidy to the fossil fuel industry over the next decade. Now, to make that happen, we're trying to put together for the first time a kind of really technologically empowered citizenry. We've just launched this scoreboard at 350.org where anybody can go up to their senator or congressman, say, are you in favor of fossil fuel subsidies? They can take 20 seconds of iPhone photo and upload it to this scoreboard. And we're going to, by the time the election comes around, have pinned everybody down. Because you know what? Nobody, not Republicans, not independents, not Democrats, think that there's any reason to be handing over billions of dollars to Exxon. Even if you like Exxon, they clearly don't need the money, you know? And we're clearly not subsidizing anything because we learned how to burn coal 300 years ago.
Right.
This is like, you know, giving someone a scholarship.
This is not a nascent technology.
It's like giving someone a scholarship to go to college for the 29th time, you know?
Right.
It's like, guys, after a certain point, you got to pay for it yourselves, you know?
Well, so now this is interesting because that model reminds me of the one that was organized, the Talking Points memo in 2005 when they were fighting the privatization of Social Security, where you had basically crowdsourcing individuals across the country and putting their representative on record and pinning them down and saying, answer this question, where are you going to be? Because it It prevents them from being able to sort of dodge that question get buried in a voice vote somewhere.
And you know what? If they're not willing to do it, we're going to do our best to shame them. All these guys take money from the fossil fuel industry. If you do that, you should be proud of it. You should be like the NASCAR drivers who wear their allegiance literally on their sleeve. We've got people doctoring up a couple of hundred blue blazers with all the logos of people's sponsors, and we're going to be handing them out. You should go on the floor of the Senate. If you're going to argue for giving people's hard-earned money over to Exxon, you should go on the Senate and say, well, you know what, I need to do this because Exxon's giving me money.
Now, after you go after the direct subsidies, how do you then go after the tougher nut to crack, which is to make people understand that we are subsidizing them every time you take your kid down because they've got asthma. We're subsidizing them every time there's a drought somewhere, or as the climate is...
I'm going to be secretive with you. We've got a plan, and it unveils the day after the election, literally the night after. Naomi Klein and I and a few others have been hard at work, and we're going to do our best to rock the world of the fossil fuel industry. For the moment, we're going to concentrate through the election on getting rid of these direct subsidies and really making it clear just how complicit the political class is with this kind of, outright corruption.
All right. Well, let's make an agreement to make sure that we're talking the day after the election.
The day after the election, we're there.
Okay. And I've got that commitment. We'll put that down. Our producer has marked that in the books. But let me just briefly, how will you know, when is that point where the direct subsidies, that you will know if you've achieved that? Is that in the context of the budget or fight?
No,
or?
Hopefully we can force a vote in the House or the Senate. I don't know whether we can. In the House, maybe not. In the Senate, maybe so. To really take this on and at least get people on record so we know. I mean, that's, you know, what else are you going to do?
Bill McKibben, 350.org. Always a pleasure. Thanks.
Always a pleasure, brother. Take care.
Bill McKibben is the founder of 350.org and author of the new book, Earth: Making a Life on a Tough New Planet.
Coming up on Ring of Fire, Truth Out reporter Mike Ludwig is going to join us to talk about the fracking industry's effort to manipulate landowners in areas that are being stripped of their resources completely. Water being poisoned, people being poisoned. I'm Mike Papantonio. You're listening to Ring of Fire. I'm Mike Papantonio, and you've been listening to a free sample of Ring of Fire Radio. If you'd like to listen to the full show, subscribe to our weekly podcast at our website at ringoffireradio.com. It's your support that helps keep us on the air.